everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2024, and you're listening to episode 406, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the films of M. Night Shyamalan and his latest entry into his filmography, which is called Trap, which is in theaters now. Today's guest is Cole Burgett, who is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Cole teaches systematic theology and Bible exposition classes and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. Cole has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal, and his review is called Faith, Family, and Fear, The Films of M. Night Shyamalan. And you can read his review for free at our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on again.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, today we're talking about M. Night Shyamalan films and back to the GOAT one that he did, which was about, you know, the famous line, I see dead people, the sixth sense. Now, if I'm spoiling that for you, you're a little couple decades late to the party. But I would say that people have been aware of his work, even if they haven't seen his films, because they remember that famous film with Bruce Willis back in the day, and then some of his other work like Signs. And so there might be some younger folks that aren't that familiar with M. Night Shyamalan. That's kind of why we're covering him today, because he has a new film in theaters right now. But tell us a little bit about his films and some of the themes that are part of his body of work.
Sure. So Shyamalan is obviously he's a filmmaker. He sort of became pretty well known for twist endings. That sort of became the thing to see one of his movies for, is you never really knew where it was going to go. Ended up being nominated, I think, for, was it 2 Academy Awards and a Golden Globe, something like that. He's quite well known these days. And by and large, even though, you know, his career did, the general characterization is that his career sort of lulled for about a 10-year period in the mid-2000s going into the early 2010s. His films have done really well financially. Altogether, his movies have made billions at the box office. So for a single filmmaker who you know, is sort of doing it his own way and is not necessarily part of the stereotypical, let's say,
like an IP series.
Yeah.
He's not involved. All of his works are original.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm getting at. For someone who's not part of the Hollywood machine, he's done really, really well. And practically everybody, you know, has a kind of, let's say, favorite film that he's done, something like that. Even my own family, who, you know, they're not serious moviegoers. They are at least familiar with the name and all have sort of a film that they like or have seen of his. The film that you mentioned, the film that really put him on the map after he sort of had a fairly nasty falling out with Harvey Weinstein, was The Sixth Sense, which was very, very original. Story goes that Weinstein's stance on it was his films were always a little too supernatural. They were always a little too sentimental. And he sort of, you know, made a very pronounced statement when he wrote and then did The Sixth Sense, which ultimately earned him Academy Award nominations for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. That's the film that you mentioned with Bruce Willis and a very young Haley Joel Osment and Toni Collette, with a really a sort of a now, it almost has a kind of mythic reputation among just, you know, cinephiles, right, for the twist ending. The Sixth Sense is one of those really well-executed films that when you see the very last scene, you suddenly rethink everything you've just watched differently. And then it is a very different film on the second viewing when you know the twist. And you can then go back and watch the film and see all the little things he did to sort of clue you in that the twist was coming. And it still holds up today. The Sixth Sense is an absolute classic of the supernatural genre, thriller genre, if you will. Very, very well done movie. He would go on to do the films Unbreakable, Signs, and The Village. Those were sort of the next big three movies he did. The Sixth Sense was 1999. Unbreakable came out in 2000, also with Bruce Willis, which was sort of a take on the superhero genre before the superhero genre became popular. It is one of my favorite movies. I think it is probably the most original superhero film that I've seen. And when I say original, I mean, you know, not tied to another IP. It's not a Marvel superhero. It's not a DC superhero, but it is a superhero movie that is sort of examining superhero tropes and those kinds of things. And it's completely original and it's extremely well done. His film Signs with Mel Gibson in 2002, I used to teach as part of a film unit for a college course to Bible students, actually. So that one in particular, I think you can get a lot of mileage out of as a Christian, because it's following an Episcopalian priest. And then The Village, sort of controversial. A lot of people didn't really like the ending to The Village. I watched it when I was younger. It was okay. It's not a film that I was set on rewatching. Then after that, he had a string of, you know, less popular films that sort of culminated with The Last Airbender, which was an adaptation of the classic Avatar cartoon. Avatar, not James Cameron, but Avatar The Last Airbender, the Nickelodeon production. Was not well received at all. And then in 2015, he started to make a comeback. He did The Visit, and then in 2016 and 2019, he did Split and Glass, and which both of which functioned as sequels to Unbreakable. You didn't really know it functioned as a sequel to Unbreakable until the very end of Split. And then Glass sort of rounds out this superhero trilogy, which is, you know, maybe you could argue, apart from The Sixth Sense, is maybe the guy's magnum opus at this point, that superhero trilogy of films. And then he's been putting out a film every 2 or 3 years since then. He did Old, Knock at the Cabin, and now Trap. So that's sort of an overview of his movies. And he's been involved in some television series along the way. I know he was the executive producer on the show Wayward Pines, which I think was an adaptation of a novel. It lasted maybe two seasons. And then on Apple TV Plus, there was that series Servant. And he was showrunner for that. And it ran, and from like 2019, 2020 until last year, 2023. So he's, you know, he's been working. He's had a pretty steady career making movies and has done really well for himself.
So the reason why we're talking about him is he has had a long career and he's kind of rebooting himself after perhaps a few strings of not as successful films as he has had in the past. And so he's back in theaters again this summer with a film that is called Trap, which was just released in the last week or so. And so what is this film Trap about? And how does it relate to other of Shyamalan's films?
So Trap is, it's both, I would say, a little more grown-up version of Shyamalan's work. But I would also say it is very much vintage M. Night Shyamalan. The film is it stars Josh Hartnett, who sort of he had success back when Pearl Harbor, Black Hawk Down, those movies came out. He worked throughout the early 2000s, really in supporting roles. He had a supporting role in the film Hollywood Homicide with Harrison Ford. And he sort of, you know, spent a lot of time with his kids, sort of the way I understood it. But then last year, he came back really with a vengeance, if you will. He worked steadily throughout the whole time, but he didn't really have, you know, I guess what you'd think of as leading man status for a while. But he comes back in Oppenheimer as Ernest Lawrence it was a very highly acclaimed performance. And now Trap, he is back as the leading guy. And in Trap, he plays this guy named Cooper. And Cooper is a serial killer. This is not, this is all in the trailers, right? Cooper is a serial killer, and he is attending a concert with his daughter. And while he's at this concert, he begins to realize that this whole concert is a very elaborate sting operation that has been set up by the FBI to catch the serial killer, which is actually him. And so the suspense, the tension of the film is you essentially following the bad guy, following what would in any other movie be the villain, as he tries to sort of outsmart the people who are chasing him, and then also, you know, maintain his relationship with his daughter. Now, that's all in the trailers. What the trailers don't show you, and I was actually very impressed with this, I think we talked at one point, even when we were discussing doing this film, you know, what's the twist going to be? Because his movies and his trailers are sort of notorious for setting you up to think one thing and then doing something different. None of the trailers really show you that the movie moves beyond the concert by about the halfway point. And then it introduces not just his daughter, but it also introduces his wife, and he has a son as well. And the film really gets into this family dynamic between the main character, his family, and all of that rich, you know, drama that you're going to get with a story like this. So that's where the story actually goes. But it's ultimately about this this serial killer who is in the middle of being figured out and caught by everyone around him.
That does seem like a very macabre setup, very creepy and scary. And he does have a little bit of that, not necessarily a horror film, but just kind of that dread and spookiness to some of his films. So this is interesting that a lot of reviewers that noted that this film Trap is really, like you mentioned, his family, a story about fatherhood. And is that something that is an underlying theme in this film?
Absolutely. Most of Shyamalan's films, and this is one of the things worth pointing out about them, especially when you're talking with Christians, right? Most of his films deal in some way, shape, form, or fashion with family. They typically have protagonists or at least major characters who are dealing with some kind of family dysfunction, something like that. Unbreakable comes to mind. The character of David, played by Bruce Willis, part of the drama of that film is his relationship with his son and the way that his son views him. And of course, this all ties into the superhero idea. And beyond that, you have the film that I used to teach, Signs, which is pretty much a film about a family that is falling apart in the middle of an alien invasion. Mel Gibson plays, I mentioned this Episcopalian who has had his faith rocked after the death of his wife. And so he's walked away from the clergy. He is very clearly angry at God. And his family, it also has a younger Joaquin Phoenix in it as his, I think it's his brother, his younger brother. They're trying to put themselves back together. So this idea of fatherhood, this idea of the dysfunctional family, that's a recurring theme in this guy's filmography. And Trap sort of stays very true to that. And when I said that this is sort of a more grown-up version of some of Shyamalan's earlier works, that's what I mean, where this film is as much about what it looks like to be a good husband as much as it is what it means to be a good father. The trailers and everything very clearly set up the relationship between Cooper and his daughter. But what you don't see in the trailers, but what I was actually very surprised by watching the movie, is that by the third act, it really becomes about Cooper's relationship with his wife, who is played by Allison Pill. Allison Pill, she's her breakthrough role, I think, was back in the mid-2000s. She was in Star Trek Picard. That's where I really saw her and got to know the actress. She's had some other work. I think she was in Hail Caesar, the Coen film, the Coen brothers film. But she plays Cooper's wife in this film. And sort of the twist in this movie, really, you can look at it two ways, right? The reveal that the main character is a serial killer is there in like the first 5 minutes of the movie. So the twist is at the beginning of this movie. But then there's a further twist as you go through the film, which is that it was actually his wife who set him up. She becomes suspicious of him and very intentionally leaves clues for the police to find that leads to them setting up the sting operation at the concert. So the twist of the movie is that it's his wife who is ultimately responsible for all of this. Once she began to get suspicious that her husband was doing things he wasn't supposed to do. And so the movie comes down to just really a fairly extended conversation scene where all of this is revealed. And this is actually one of the great reasons why I say that, you know, never underestimate the power of expositional dialogue well written. You'll hear oftentimes people complain, and I think people say this because they hear other people say it, but they don't actually really get what they mean when they say it, where they say, oh, there's just so much exposition. There's so much exposition. Yeah, well, that's what stories are, is exposition. It's explaining why things happened and why you went from point A to point B. Never underestimate, you know, a good exposition when it's actually written well. And this film is that. The whole ending of the movie, the whole last little bit, and it really is sort of you're sitting there with your nerves fraying. It's a conversation between Cooper and his wife. They sit down at the, I guess, like the dinner table after everybody sort of thinks, you know, the danger is past. He comes back and he sits down with his wife and he's figured it out at this point. So it's, you're sort of just waiting for him to snap and kill her. And they're just sort of sitting there eating pie together, and having this conversation about where things went wrong, why she did what she did, what happened between them. And it's incredibly well done. Like I said, you're sort of sitting there, you know, waiting for him to just lose his mind at any second, and your nerves are fraying. But it really is just an extended exposition dump done extremely, extremely well. And it works. It works. And it highlights the themes of the film, and it shows a filmmaker who has explored his thoughts on what it means to be a father now it's sort of moved. He's moved the discussion over to what it means to be a husband. So it's almost like he's interrogating another aspect of the family unit, the nuclear family unit. And what's interesting is right before this film came out, after you and I had talked about doing it, I had never seen Old. I've seen, I think, all of his movies with the exception of Old and Knock at the Cabin. So the two most recent ones. I still haven't seen Knock at the Cabin, though I did end up doing a little bit of research for it to write the article and to do the podcast. But I went back and I watched Old for the first time. And when I watched Old, I sort of noticed the same themes that emerged in Trap. I didn't realize this till after I saw Trap. But in Old, he has his traditional nuclear family unit stuff going on there. But what I found and thought was interesting is that there's a whole new dynamic to the film, where a lot of it does focus on the relationship between husbands, wives, partners, that kind of a thing. So many of the characters have that dynamic. And arguably the main family, the main characters of Old, a lot of it has to do, a lot of the tension really, has to do with the relationship between this man and woman in a very rocky place in their marriage. And this film very much does the same thing. It very much capitalizes on that. So I think what we see happening is Shyamalan's works growing, maturing, and sort of shifting to interrogate, you know, different aspects of the family. And I think that's interesting. Trap has gotten, I would say, you know, some mixed reviews, which at this point, this is what his films do. And I'm completely okay with that. I'm completely okay with some people liking it, completely okay with some people not. I actually think a film that generates mixed reviews is probably doing something interesting, versus just being a crowd pleaser. And I do like that. I'm interested in that. And so the film, it's still too early to tell, I think, if it's going to do really well at the box office. I think its budget was something in the ballpark of $30 million. At this point, I think it's been in theaters a couple of weeks and it's sitting, last I looked, at $25 million. So it hasn't quite made its budget back yet. And of course, that's not taking into account post-production, advertising, stuff like that. It's not taking into account advertising. It's not taking into account marketing. So it'll have to do, you know, it's going to have to double what it has now in order for it to really make money, turn profit. But, you know, it's sort of up against the new Marvel film that's out right now at the box office, which is doing extremely well. So we'll see what happens.
Because you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a podcast listener like me to all kinds of different content. And one thing I hope you appreciate about this podcast from the Christian Research Journal is there is a lot of consistency and a lot of content to mine. I find sometimes some of the podcasts I'm subscribed to, even if they're from very well-known names, they are kind of sporadic. They don't always have new episodes, but I hope you are enjoying and feeling encouraged by a brand new episode of the Postmodern Realities podcast every week, and that you now have more than 405 episodes to go through, and then 406 if we include this one. And so if you're a new listener, please go back to the archive and think through all of the topics that we have great discussions with our authors on. You'll just really enjoy them. And so we have a lot of great content planned out for you for the rest of the year. And specifically in October, it comes around, and that's when our culture looks at all kinds of spooky stuff. And so we will be dealing with the cult and occult in October. But we have other great content coming up for you, including consciousness and AI, and if Christians should use New Age massage therapies, and those are so ubiquitous. They're everywhere, from cupping to hot stone massage to Thai massage and acupuncture, acupressure, all those kinds of things. We're going to have a discussion coming up on that shortly in the next several weeks. So we are grateful for your partnership. By just listening, please get the word out. Tell everybody about this podcast, because the more people that are downloading our episodes, and specifically, if you could rate or review us on Apple Podcasts, that's kind of where the main aggregation is going, we would be so very grateful. And we haven't had anything since last month, but it would be really cool if we could have one per month. So maybe you are the person to write us a review, a short, like one sentence, why you enjoy listening to this for August, and I'll read out your review if you post it in the next couple of weeks. So you also, as I've been mentioning, do not want to miss our other podcast, Christian Research Journal Reads. It is audio versions of these very articles that we talk about with our authors. If you commute to work or work out or something like that and just think, oh, I don't have time to read this in-depth article, well, we're going to solve that for you, because we're going to bring you all of the best and most popular content from our magazine on our website right to your earbuds. So don't miss out on subscribing to the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast. So we thank you for your support by sharing episodes on your social media, telling a friend, as I said, giving us a review, and also listening to our other podcast. Thanks for your partnership in all those ways. And now back to my conversation about M. Night Shyamalan films with Cole Brigette. Well, you were just giving us an overview of one of the pivotal parts of this film, which is the relationship between the serial killer and his wife in the film Trap. And, you know, earlier you said that a lot of his films do deal with families, and you mentioned his film Old, which actually, before we did this podcast, I didn't realize he had a film that came out during the COVID years, but he did. Old came out in 2021. So can you kind of give us a little bit more and talk a little bit more about how M. Night Shyamalan deals with the themes of family and relationships?
Yeah, so kind of like I said earlier, what you see is sort of a progression through his films from one facet of the nuclear family to another. And I would say that his films absolutely started out dealing predominantly with some kind of fatherhood theme. You can see this very clearly with The Sixth Sense, where Bruce Willis becomes a kind of surrogate to the character of Cole, played by Haley Joel Osment. This is the kid who says, you know, I see dead people. And the great twist of The Sixth Sense, which actually, you know what, I'm not going to spoil it. We're not going to do that. Because if you haven't seen The Sixth Sense, watch the movie. It's the one to watch. But the great twist of The Sixth Sense really makes it all the more poignant. Then when you go to Unbreakable, which he released a year later in 2000, the character of David, Bruce Willis's character, he has a very distinct kind of relationship to his son. And the way that his son sees him and thinks about him, you know, the way that kids sort of, let's say, even deify their, especially boys, right? The way that, that young boys will sort of deify their own fathers when they're young. That is a very prominent theme in the film. And of course, the film is about superheroes, and David literally becoming a kind of superhero with this unique set of powers. That theme emerges very prominently. It's perhaps one of the best acted scenes I've seen. No pun intended. But the ending of that film, where David has finally stepped into this kind of modern superhero role, and he doesn't really have what we think of as, you know, the traditional tights as a uniform. He just has a raincoat. And it's very grounded. It's a very grounded, and if you can say, realistic take on superheroes. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what it is. And there's this wonderful scene at the end of the film where they sort of sit down at the breakfast table, and his wife is, she's, you know, just busying herself around the house. And Bruce Willis sees an article in the newspaper that talks about this superhero who has rescued these people. And his son sees it, and his son sort of looks at him like, is this you? And he's not going to advertise it, right? He's not going to make it known. And his wife is still sort of out of the loop. And he just, you know, he's on the verge of tears, and he just nods. And it's a completely wordless scene. There's no dialogue. It's all communicated in just looks and very raw emotion. And it's extremely, extremely well acted. But it solidifies this relationship between father and son that's very prominent in that film. Signs, the next film. Signs is ultimately a movie about a father who is trying to keep his family together after the loss of his wife and the kid's mother. His relationship to his children is everything. Becoming what he needs to be for his children, rediscovering his faith, realizing that you know, he may have lost his faith in God, but his children have nothing but their faith in him as their father, and realizing that responsibility, and then having to grapple with his own faith and his own faith in God as a result of that, is very well handled. So you see very early on in Shyamalan's films this fixation on the family unit. There's one article I read when I was writing the article for this. For the life of me, I cannot remember who wrote it, or I would credit them. They're credited in the article, so I'll leave it there. But one of the things that the film critic observed is that there's almost a kind of fixation with Shyamalan upon his own fears as a father. He puts his own insecurities on the page when he writes his movies. He puts his own insecurities on screen. And he sort of wrestles with his own fears as the movies go on. And I think that that's probably a very keen observation. That's usually how, you know, some of the best art is produced, is, you know, someone who has the strength of ego to put themselves on the page. And it's like that old adage, you know, happy people never wrote a good book, because there's no depth to that. There's no contradiction. There's no irony there. And there is some truth to that. And so I think what you see happening with these more recent films, especially the film like Old, which is all about aging, it's all about aging, especially this film Old and now Trap, I think you see Shyamalan wrestling through, if the thesis that he's putting his fears on screen holds up, and I think it does, then what you're seeing happening in these later films is him, you know, wrestling with his status as a husband, if you will. He's wrestling through aging. He's wrestling through what it means to grow old together, to get to know each other, to become complacent in a relationship because you know each other so extremely well. That's actually one of the key themes of dialogue that is discussed in Trap between Cooper and his wife, is that they somehow know each other's tiniest ticks. They know each other so well, and yet you know, he has this whole double life as a serial killer that is there, which, of course, the great irony of that is it's ultimately his wife who figures him out. It's ultimately his wife who senses something is wrong, who puts the police on his trail. And it just makes a whole lot of logical sense considering the dynamic between them. And even the ages of the children in the movies, they sort of age with Shyamalan's kids. In The Sixth Sense, in Unbreakable, in Signs, the kids are younger. In Old, the kids are getting to be teenagers. In Trap, his kid's a teenager. But the pop star in the film, where they go to a concert to see a pop star, the pop star in the movie is portrayed by Shyamalan's daughter, who is an R&B singer, and has a great, has really a substantial role in the movie. She's quite a good actress. But that the girl who's on stage, that's his daughter, and she wrote something in the ballpark of like 14 original songs for Trap. And so you can actually see how the characters in the movies, the children at least, actually age and grow up as his own children have aged and grown up. So I very much think he's a filmmaker who has a great amount of sincerity to him. And I really appreciate that, especially in this age of very, you know, self-aware storytelling, very tongue-in-cheek storytelling, very ironic storytelling. You know, you can't have anything that resembles a genuine emotion anymore that isn't fleeting. Every time you have a genuine emotion in a Marvel film, somebody has to come along and make a wisecrack about it, you know, within 2 minutes to let everybody know, oh, this is just a stupid superhero movie. We're all in on the joke. Shyamalan is a very sincere storyteller. And I think that's absolutely worth paying attention to, especially when you have a filmmaker who is making movies that are interested in the nuclear family unit, that are interested in the importance of family, that are interested in issues like faith, even if he does not have what we would call an orthodox Christian worldview, to use that horrible word, worldview that I despise. Even if he doesn't see the world through an orthodox Christian lens, he is at least interested in interrogating aspects of faith. And he very clearly has some kind of predisposition toward the subject. His backstory, from what I gather, is that he grew up a Hindu. He was born in India. He grew up a Hindu, but spent about 10 years in Catholic school. So he has a predisposition toward spiritual things. And I think that's something especially a Christian or a cultural apologist can capitalize on when watching his films. So those are sort of the major themes that run through his work, and you know, family's the big one.
I find it interesting that his most recent spate of films all have to do with families being trapped. I mean, Yes. Literally, like Trap and Old and Not
on the Island. Yeah.
So these like trio of films really have that kind of claustrophobic situation, or really, whether it's, I mean, the premise of Old is quite terrifying, but
yeah, it is.
And I can't imagine seeing that film. It would probably be kind of scary. He does have that spooky, scary kind of thing, but not in the sense of, you know, Freddy Krueger type of thing.
No, it's never gratuitous. It's never gratuitous.
And so it's kind of interesting that he might be exploring some of that recently, like how are families interacting, relationships interacting in some kind of very contained place, whether it's the, you know, the concert and then the, you know, the house, or in Trap or in Old, this, you know, really crazy island beach resort that's, you know, ominous, or the cabin. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I do find it really interesting. And it's almost like, to your point, that he puts these families in a pressure cooker. He puts them in a real tense situation. And he keeps, you know, ratcheting up the tension, ratcheting up the pressure to see, you know, do they fold or do they come together? And how do they interface and interact in those moments? And I will say, I think it's worth pointing out, you know, I don't know that I've seen a film he's done where he hasn't in some way, shape, form, or fashion made a very important and profound statement about the importance of family, about the family unit, the nuclear family unit especially, being a source of strength, being when it's functioning, being a source of strength, being a source that can be relied upon in moments of high tension and struggle. I mean, Old especially, the whole movie is really about this family that is losing time. They're getting old. Literally, it's in the title. They're aging rapidly at an absurd rate, and they're running out of time, and realizing that all of the little petty grievances that tear especially younger families apart because egos get in the way and things like that, all of these little petty things sort of fade by the end of it. There's a wonderful little scene there in Old I'm thinking of, which also had a really good actors in it. He is great at casting these not necessarily leading actors in leading roles, and really they do a good job with it. There's a wonderful little scene in Old where I think the husband and the wife, they've grown old together, and they're just sort of sitting there. And if I'm not mistaken, it's like they can't even remember what they were fighting about at the start of the movie, because, you know, he's always finding families in the middle of a dysfunction. And they come into the movie and they're on the verge of a divorce. And by the end of the movie, they're sitting there and they can't even remember why they were mad. They can't even remember what they were arguing about. And it's a really, really well done scene, but it underscores the theme that he's dealing with. It underscores the points that he's making all throughout these movies.
So you just barely touched a few moments ago on faith in M. Night Shyamalan films, and that's something that he explores. So how does he deal with the subject of faith, and which particular films really showcase him thinking through that theme?
Yeah, the idea of faith in Shyamalan's films, less prominent, I would say, than his themes of family. That being said, his films, certain ones, do an excellent job of making a lot of, giving the, let's say, the cultural apologist a lot of room to get their foot in the door. The film that most readily comes to mind, and should be no surprise for reasons we've already talked about, is Signed, the one that I used to teach. And there was a reason I used to teach it with Bible students. Signs, like I mentioned, is about an Episcopalian who has lost his faith in God. And what Shyamalan does so keenly in that film is he tethers the children's view of their father to the father's view of God. And one of the realizations throughout the film is the idea that, you know, even though the father has lost his faith in his, you know, father, if you will, the children are dependent entirely, because they're children, upon their faith in their father. And it's a really interesting lens through which he chooses to explore not just fatherhood, but then faith as well. The sort of, if anybody ever goes to, you know, like Bible college or something like that, you'll hear very early on, in sort of like the early classes, someone will make a statement like, before your horizontal relationships can slot into place, you have to have your vertical relationship solidified. And essentially, the principle they're making known and saying that is very simply that before you can expect to have your relationships with people function the way that they're supposed to, you have to have your relationship with God squared away. You have to have your relationship with God viewed in the right context before you can hope to interact with other people in a way that's meaningful. And I think that idea, as it's not really juvenile, I don't want to say it's a juvenile idea, but that idea, as simple as it is and as, you know, basic, I would say, as it is, that is a basic idea that Shyamalan highlights really well in the film Signs. And especially when it's viewed in the context of family. That is so well done and well handled. So Signs, I would say, is a film that interfaces with faith in interesting ways. As far as others, The Sixth Sense usually is, someone will try to talk about it in the context of faith, maybe. It's definitely more supernaturally minded than some of the other movies. There's The Village, which sort of kind of deals with cults. I would actually say that the films Unbreakable, Split, and Glass, which again function as a kind of trilogy, they also have a certain take on faith that is interesting to see. It's not so much a direct, you know, this is about faith in a higher power, but those three films certainly get into the nature of evil, and which I think is very interesting. They sort of are his take on the question of theodicy, right? Evil in the world and the responsibility one has towards goodness. So while his films may not be all about faith, I certainly think his films are quite theological. I haven't seen Knock at the Cabin, so I can't really speak fully intelligently to that one. But I know that it's based on a book, and the setup would make me think that there's probably some ideas of at least Apocalypse in there, which was also the film The Happening, which had Mark Wahlberg in it, which he did back in 2008. Very, very not well received. But that film was a lot about the apocalypse, the end times, that kind of a thing. So I'm assuming Knock at the Cabin is probably a little more, you know, grown-up riff on that. And so again, if the films don't deal directly with faith, they're at least deeply theological in concern. And this all stems, I think, out of his own background. He's been talked to and has talked about his own beliefs at length. One of the most recent interviews I found actually came out while he was promoting Knock at the Cabin. And this was, I think, that film came out last year. So I referenced that interview in the article because it was the most recent one I could find. And in that promotional tour, one of the things he talks about is being interested in issues of faith. It's being interested in issues of the supernatural. And in that interview, he espouses views, and the direct quotation is in the article, so you can go there to get the word for word. But to summarize, he is more or less agnostic, is what it sounds like. He's very interested in spirituality, as he calls it, which, you know, that's the sexy thing to be interested in these days. He's very interested in spirituality. He is very skeptical, in his own words. He's skeptical of organized religion, also a very sexy thing to say these days. But he's interested in spirituality. And here's the difference from what he does and what a lot of other filmmakers or storytellers do, and why I sort of give him a little more credence than others. He is interested in spirituality in a sincere way. And it's not some fruitcake, you know, new age, you know, to a lot of Christians will say it's a modern day Gnosticism or something like that. But it's not this kind of, you know, fruitcake new age, you know, idea interested in crystals and stuff like that. No, no, no. He's not interested in that kind of nonsense. What he sees, though, is the absolute importance of a worldview that accommodates the supernatural, of a worldview that deals with maybe it's what G.K. Chesterton used to say. The world is almost logical. I love that. The world is almost logical. You can sit, you can think through it, but every now and then there's going to be a little bit of a wrinkle that comes along that makes you think maybe you don't have everything figured out. Maybe there's something greater at work than just what's going on in your own brain. And I think this is a filmmaker who gets the importance of that. And from a non-Christian, but certainly open to having the conversation standpoint, he's willing to ask those kinds of questions and tell stories that invite those kinds of discussions. And at that level, I can really appreciate his work.
Well, it is kind of interesting because I don't know if our listeners know this, we didn't mention it up front, but M. Night Shyamalan is South Asian, from Asia and from India in particular. And he was born in India, but he came to the U.S. as an infant. So basically born and raised in the United States. Well, not born, but raised in the United States. And he said in a 2010 interview that he was raised Hindu, but he also attended a Roman Catholic school. I think it's interesting that he's thinking through a lot of different things about faith in some of his films, because it's kind of a mashup of different things, because his family was Hindu, yet he went to this Roman Catholic school. And it was interesting because supposedly he got one of the best grades in Bible when he was going to school. And actually, that's really interesting, right? Because my kids went to a Christian school and they had exchange students. And one of the exchange students, she was a total atheist. In high school, she got all the highest grades in the Bible. And she went on to an Ivy League school, which is pretty, or the equivalent of an Ivy League school. But she, and so especially when you get into high school Bible, it's not just facts that you need to know. You need to understand it more at a deeper level. And that's what I thought was pretty fascinating, is that all 4 years she was at our Christian high school, she got the highest grades in Bible. And a lot of that is Christian apologetics and all kinds of things.
Yeah, this is a whole other interesting discussion. But what you're describing about Shyamalan, I've seen, and kind of like what you're describing with this, with the exchange student. I won't mention the name, but when I was younger, I would watch, because this is, you know, every, I think, Christian has this sort of phase at some point. You know, I would watch these debates between Christians and atheists and things like that. And there are some that are extremely well done. The one I will mention, one I won't mention the other. The one that I will mention, I'll say if you've never seen the film Collision with Doug Wilson and Christopher Hitchens, Hitchens the sort of legendary new atheist, and Doug Wilson the reformed pastor, who they sort of cultivated a friendship. But both of them, you know, Hitchens is dead now, but both of them were, are, however you want to say that, sort of bulldogs when it comes to debating, their beliefs. And they cultivated a kind of friendship, and the film Collision, it's a documentary. They did a series of debates at colleges, and the film follows them, but it also showcases them when they're not on the debate scene. So you'll get a lot of scenes of them just sitting at a bar together, drinking and talking and joking and getting to know each other. But then when they go into the debates, man, it's like the light switch flips and they're, I mean, at each other's throats. It's a wonderful, wonderful film to see. But when I was younger, I would watch these kinds of debates and things like that. And the number of times, again, I won't mention the specific one that comes to mind, but the number of times that I would sit there and listen to the atheist talk, and I would think to myself, you know what? As far as the hermeneutic goes, right, as far as the interpretation of a specific passage of scripture, the atheist gets this better than the Christian, because the Christian is thinking in theological categories and circles. They're thinking in the way that they've been trained to think. And they can't actually see that the really just the common sense reading of the passage is what the atheist is suggesting. The atheist gets what the author is saying, but is coming to the wrong conclusion, whereas the Christian is sitting there with the wrong starting point because they can't, they're thinking theologically. They're not thinking in terms of what's written. They're thinking theologically, and so the point that they make is still somehow missing the point, even if their conclusions at the end of the day are I think, a little more in line with Scripture. The number of times I saw that really highlighted to me the importance of a sound hermeneutic, of a consistent hermeneutic, of coming to the Bible and saying, well, I'm not going to pick up my theological lens, whatever your theological lens is, whether it's Reformed, whether it's not Reformed, whether it's Pentecostal, whatever. Whatever your theological lens is, what we don't do is sit down and go, well, let me just put my you know, theological glasses on and then read the Bible and go, oh, okay, that's what it's saying. No, you read the text, and the text informs, builds your theology, and you have to be honest with the text first. So yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. And so I'm not really surprised that someone like Shyamalan, who certainly has an affinity for spiritual things, could come to a Bible class and really excel. I can completely see that.
So as we noted, oh, and I want to make an editorial note that Doug Wilson is a pastor kind of on the extreme fringe of some theological views. So I will just leave that there. He's very controversial. Which Shyamalan films do you think that Christians could see? I think a lot of them have, like I said, that spooky undertone, but then also suggest a lot of gory things. And certain films I can't imagine most Christians would want to see when we think of some of his work that involved some, I think it was newer work like Split with this guy who's, you know, captured some teenage girls kind of thing. So is there any work? Is it some of the more classic stuff back in the 90s, The Sixth Sense, or around 2000, Unbreakable was a big one that he did, and then Signs, or, you know, I don't know if you would say with caution, some Christians couldn't see any of his films.
Yeah, I would say the three to see.
And I'm not talking about the rating of the films.
Right.
I'm talking about the actual content.
Yeah, I would say the three to see for sure. If you've never seen his films and you're thinking about watching them, absolutely watch The Sixth Sense. Start there. That's the film that, you know, put him on the map, Academy Award nominations, all that kind of stuff. The Sixth Sense, 1999, Unbreakable, 2000, Signs, 2002. Those three films, I think Christians can see and get their hands on, especially the cultural apologists to really talk about matters of faith, belief, family, those types of things. Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs. Films to absolutely avoid, you know, I don't know that I could say you should absolutely avoid any of the movies he's made. I don't know that any of them are done in a way that is that level of, you know, oh my gosh, I can't watch this. I don't think he's made a movie like that. There are certainly films that are less well received than others, like The Happening, Lady in the Water, The Last Airbender, After Earth. All of those movies are just kind of like, you know, they were just not well made for whatever reason. They're poorly received films. Those I would say to be cautious about. I don't know. Old can be pretty intense in parts.
I can't imagine some Christians seeing Old.
Yeah, it was pretty intense in parts, but actually nowhere near as intense as I thought it would be. Because when Old came out, I remember reading some stuff that made me think that it was going to be, oh dear, like this is going to be really, you know, a zinger. And the truth is it wasn't, at least in my estimation, it wasn't. The Visit is a little more of a scary film than others. It's sort of not many people have seen The Visit, at least that I talked to. Shyamalan did The Visit back in 2015, and it was sort of a smaller film that brought him a career resurgence for him. I saw it, thought it was okay, but I don't know that that's a film that Christians would go out of their way to see. But those would be my suggestions for ones that you should see. The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs. And then if you really do like Unbreakable and you really want to see a fascinating alternate take on superheroes, then watch Split and Glass after that. Unbreakable, Split, and Glass form a trilogy that is really, I think, is quite unique today.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, the summer is ending. We have a couple more film reviews of series that have been going on for about 40 years. At least one of them. We're going to cover the next installment of Aliens, which started in the 1970s. But now we get more into films that are going to be, you know, considered perhaps for Oscar season. I just want to ask you, what kind of films do you prefer? Do you prefer the popcorn, superhero, light fare of the summer, or would you rather watch some of the philosophical films and more heavy dramas that come out in the fall?
It depends on my mood is how I'll answer that. I'll watch, you know, probably a good balance of both. There hasn't actually been that many blockbusters out this year. It's sort of been a very dry season at the box office. So we'll see what some of these brainier films can do at the end of the year.
Except for Deadpool as making all kinds of records in terms of, you know, how much it's making at the box office, but we would not recommend that to anyone. And we have an article that we did about anti-heroes that we will link, including Deadpool, in the show notes of this episode. But this current one, I understand, is also blasphemous. So we would suggest that Christians skip this one in the theater or skip it even when it's streaming.
Yeah, I've never seen the Deadpool movie, so I can't speak intelligently to that. But I would say it wouldn't surprise me. That's what I'll say.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 406 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Cole Burgett, and he has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal. His review is called Faith, Family, and Fear, The Films of M. Night Shyamalan. And you can read his review absolutely free on our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal, Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.